Let's say you're adding or updating a service or a microservice to an existing system. You want to monitor the performance of the service and the performance impact of the whole system. Omri SaaS joins the show today to talk about monitoring of services.
Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics.
On today's episode of Test and Code, I'm super excited to finally have Omri on. You're from Datadog. I guess I should ask your name first, but is it SaaS?
Yes. My brother and I are both in tech, and we get the software as a service question fairly often.
But it's spelled different. It's like the programming language instead, right?
Yep.
We were going to talk about monitoring, because I actually don't really know much about monitoring, and also about kind of how it's changed with some of the more microservices and stuff. But before we jump into that, can you tell me a little bit who you are?
Sure. So my name's Omri SaaS, not spelled like software as a service. I've been with Datadog for about 2.5 years. I'm a senior product manager in our APM department. That's application performance monitoring. It's traditionally been considered one of the three pillars of observability, as a kind of core principle of monitoring, and we'll get into that. In this capacity, I do product management, or I provide product management for all of our teams that revolve around service observability. So how do we reason about services, applications in a microservice or hybrid environment? How do we get health metrics, detection capabilities, auto detection capabilities, remediation, et cetera, for your applications, and how that integrates with other types of monitoring, infrastructure monitoring, network monitoring, et cetera. And we'll kind of talk through these as we talk more broadly. Prior to Datadog, I was a product manager for Wirecutter, one of the New York Times smaller publications. And before that, I was a product manager for a data product at Hearst Media. So kind of got a taste of a lot of world of product management.
Okay. What is a product manager versus, you know, so what is your day like? Do you talk with customers? Do you work with engineers? Are you planning things?
So it's the question I get asked the most. The best answer I can give you is via an analogy, maybe it's because I grew up with kind of the relevant folks at home, but a product manager is kind of like a music producer, but for software. So we don't do the actual software ourselves, right? Like, no one wants me to do any type of coding. That scares everyone. But I make sure that the people who actually do the art, right, and art and science of coding, that they're working on the right things, that they have the right context, that they understand what our users want. And in that, I spend about a third of my time meeting customers, potential partners, et cetera, about a third of my time with our engineers, and then about a third of my time making sure that everything else kind of goes smoothly, working with marketing, working with kind of other internal bodies within Datadog, to make sure that our product is like well understood and well supported across the board.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Sounds like fun. So something like, so when I hear about monitoring, there's a whole bunch in that range. I also hear about telemetry. So is that the same thing, or is there a difference between monitoring and telemetry?
So I'd say there's a hierarchy, right? Well, telemetry is the actual data, right? We extract telemetry from applications, from infrastructure, from third parties, from integrations, et cetera. All of these provide the basis for monitoring, because monitoring isn't just the data itself. It's also the capability to make sense of it, and in a lot of cases, to act on it. So visualizing that telemetry or creating what at Datadog we call monitors, right? So the ability to create an alert if a certain type of telemetry under certain conditions crosses a threshold, right? It's too high or it's too low or it doesn't exist anymore. All of those sort of things fall under the umbrella of monitoring. So telemetry is the data. Monitoring is what we can do with that data.
Okay. And so this has always been a thing, but it seems like it's more, I mean, maybe I'm just stating the obvious, but as companies become more and more reliant on their web presence and their applications through the web, this is more and more important because, you know, having any part of your services go down is like maybe having a store not being able to be open or something. And then there's been changes. You know, I don't even remember when it was, a few years ago or something. We were talking about monolith architectures versus microservices, and I don't really hear that much anymore because I think it's sort of a blend. You probably know more than me. Is that something you're seeing?
Definitely. As things tend to happen, you know, you talk about some secular shift in tech, right? In the beginning, it was like a cloud migration where you move off of your on-prem environments and you do a cloud migration. But the reality is that a lot of organizations that have on-prem environments, they don't fully migrate to the cloud. They start having a cloud presence and they keep their on-premise environment because migrating it is fairly hard. The same thing applies to monoliths and microservices. If you're brand new to the game, you're a tech startup or you're a tech company that was founded fairly recently, you might decide that you're going to build microservices from the get-go, in which case, kudos to you. But if you're a well-established tech firm, breaking a monolith, so to speak, isn't so easy. And what ends up happening in a lot of cases is that some pieces of functionality would be peeled off the monolith and built as microservices. New functionalities would be built as microservices, but they would all revolve around this existing monolith that will take a very long time to actually be put away or completely broken apart. So like you said, at the end of the day, what ends up happening is that we get a hybrid environment with at least one very larger kind of central monolith and a lot of microservices that surround.
Did you say one of your focuses is with services?
Correct. That's my role definition is service observability.
Okay. Service observability. So in a service, let's have an example. What's an example service we could talk about?
Ooh, honestly, almost anything. The easiest way to think about an individual service, code repo, right? Anything that you would store in a single code repo. And I don't want to get too deep in the variants of like, oh, I have a mono repo or we do something else, but at the end of the day, it's a single unit of code that can run independently, you know, takes inputs and provides outputs.
Well, the run independently is interesting because it's also something that I'm guessing, lots of assumptions here, but if it's a single repo, it's probably one team and it can be tested in isolation as well. And then is it monitored in isolation? Do you monitor a service by itself or as part of a collective or whatever?
I love that question. So I'm gonna kind of talk through the early part of your question and gonna get to the end because it gets more and more interesting. By and large, unless we're talking about a monolith, so if we're talking about a microservice-based environment, microservices are generally owned by a single team. When there's cross-ownership, it also means that there tend to be issues in operations. Who's on call? How do we determine like if we need to roll back a version? When there's single ownership, things tend to be much, much easier in that respect. Monoliths do kind of require their own principles of operations and monitoring, et cetera. We can cover that separately. But then going into how we monitor those when and test and monitor, right? We can and should do both. And that's kind of our approach to services where we say, okay, on the one hand, we want to make sure that you have golden signals, right? So like the ability to know throughput, error rates, latencies on a per service basis. And those are independent. There's no reason to muddy those across multiple services. When a single service fails, for example, or slows down, we want to know that. Like we want to pinpoint that this particular service is the one that's failing. The same thing applies for testing, right? And testing could be anything here from unit testing to testing in the CI pipeline to synthetic testing for APIs. All of those, we want to make sure that they're very localized to that service. But a service can't really be taken out of context. And when you have a production failure, figuring out where that is requires the entire mesh of services, right? And it requires knowing what service actually failed. If I go back to the store analogy that you brought up earlier, right? Like if a service goes down, is that equivalent to a store like not being able to open? It's exactly that. And the question is why, right? Like if a user is complaining like, hey, I tried to click checkout on this e-commerce website and I'm getting an error. There could be 30, 40 services on the back end that power that specific checkout request. Figuring out which one of them is failing right now for this user requires much more nuanced tooling. And this is where things like distributed tracing come into play, where for a given request, we're able to see how it traverses all microservices or all services involved and see where most of the time is spent, where errors are coming from. We're able to compile all of the error call stacks from all services into a single place, all of the log lines across multiple services into a single place. And that's where you look at it and you're like, oh, wait, I know exactly what's going on. Let me go to the service and fix it. Or I know what service is failing. Let me go figure out what's going on. Someone deployed bad code. We didn't do enough testing. Something here is amiss. Let me go deeper into whatever is happening. I need to upscale the infrastructure, right?
Yeah. That example was great about talking about really how even if you tested the heck out of the service, something always goes wrong. So something's going to go wrong in the system and you have to figure out where to fix it. And it might actually be multiple places. Interesting. And I was actually thinking that my analogy wasn't that great because it isn't like one store goes down. It's like all of your stores suddenly can't print receipts or something like that. That's a bad thing.
And it's exactly that. It becomes much more nuanced because it's not a single store, it's multiple, and it's not a single, like, it's not the lock on the door and like no one can enter. It's a whole set of systems that operate in tandem where printing receipts and scanning barcodes and what I'm not an expert on like brick and mortar stores, but I think we're talking about the same thing here.
Yeah. It sounds fascinating and fun and also sort of terrifying. I'm like suddenly like now I don't want to do a startup anymore because this sounds too scary, but it grows over time, right? People don't start with like tons of monitoring, tons of telemetry and tons of services. They start small and build up, right?
Precisely. It's an ever evolving practice. And, I'll use a phrase I learned from my engineering counterparts, one of the smartest people I get to work with and truly a privilege. He likes to talk about modes of failure, like how well do we understand how our services fail, right? And obviously, like our services are perfect. We don't have any failures. Okay, usually people laugh when I say that.
I'll add it in the laugh track later.
We add more and more monitoring and more nuanced monitoring, the better we get familiar with how our services operate and when they fail. For example, we can all start with alerting on, again, I mentioned them earlier, the golden signals, right? It's the red metrics, RED, right? Requests, errors, and duration. It's a very well-respected framework to say, okay, this is how I detect that something is off. They don't necessarily tell me what is wrong, but they help me figure out that something is wrong, right? It's very good for detection. But then as we understand, okay, this particular microservice, is constrained on CPU, right? So like when throughput goes up, it uses more CPU. So we know that's its failure mode. Like we need to alert on CPU of the underlying machines, or alternatively, it uses a lot of memory. So we need to alert on memory, things like that. So we become more and more nuanced as we go, and we evolve our monitoring. We evolve the metrics that we have on it, or we evolve the logs that we kind of develop for it, and we have better and better visibility, and we learn this over time. And every time we deploy a new service, we kind of go through the same process. We get better at it. We learn faster from one to the other. And with that, we also develop better and better practices, right? So I don't know if you've ever considered SLOs, right? Service level objectives, which is a way to reason about your production environment over time. We can also support that, and we reason about the world on those terms. I'm happy to kind of dive deeper into that.
Just a little bit.
So essentially, in this, it kind of stems from the Google SRE handbook, right? It's published a couple of years ago. It's freely available online. The idea there is that a company can have a service level agreement that defines what happens when things start to break. And then we have, under the service level agreement, service level objectives. Each objective say, okay, here is the actual definition of a metric. The threshold that if it crosses, like let's say I have uptime, I have some way of like assessing uptime for a service. If that goes under 99.9% for the last month, then I'm not in accordance with my service level agreement, and I need to go provide my customers with some explanation of what's going on, or some compensation or anything like that. The agreement defines those. The service level objectives are the things that say, okay, here's how we measure that. And here's how we say, okay, 99.9 of what? And how do we define that, and over what time spans? Those get refined over time as well, right? So like we can start with something very simple, zero errors. But then over time, we'll learn, okay, like we do have, every time we restart our application, we get some errors, but those don't impact users. We're going to define those definitions, get more and more nuanced over time.
What software doesn't have errors?
Exactly.
So, one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about this is just things get, as people scale, you were talking about the three requests, errors, and duration. I was thinking about just some of the stuff's going to happen just as people get more popular. If they get more customers, they're going to get more traffic and things are under more stress. Is there some case where you're just kind of watching things and going, well, this, none of these are a problem, but something is going to break here soon. How do you deal with that? Does monitoring help there?
Oh yes. Oh yes. It's one of the, if we kind of continue on the e-commerce example, it's something that, almost every e-commerce provider that I've worked with, worries about, and even in my past lives at Wirecutter, because everyone worries about Black Friday, right? And the brick and mortar analogy is as good here, right? Because you have all these people who are waiting to get in. You want to make sure that all of your systems are stable enough, and that they operate correctly. And there are a few aspects to this. One of them is preparatory. How do we know beforehand that we're ready? And for that, we do a lot of stress testing, load testing, all of the red metrics that we have and the more nuanced understandings that we develop over time are very, very relevant to know that, right? So we do stress testing. We see for a given level of throughput, what's our error rate? What's our latency? Is it acceptable? Is it not acceptable? And then during the actual event, right, at these peak moments, if something goes awry, monitoring is our entryway. It's like this is the first thing that happens, or this is how we detect the first sign of a problem is with monitoring tools. So a lot of our e-commerce based customers, or you know, other streaming services, media companies, they all have these events that they look forward to, and they spend months in preparation, even if it's a day, even if it's a few hours, they spend months preparing for that, and they rely heavily, very, very heavily on monitoring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things you brought up earlier was when you get more familiar with a particular service or your system altogether, you're going to be paying attention to things like CPU loads and memory
balance, you know, memory usage and stuff. And those are things that I imagine on different services, you're going to probably all the services, eventually you're going to care about that, because we all know with computers, when either of those things starts getting pegged, things go bad, and bad things happen. And it's not a software problem. It's a basically just junk, you, thrashing and stuff like that happens. Yep. So interesting. Now I'm not so scared. Yeah, this sounds pretty good. Now, one of the things I was always curious about is logging. I rely heavily on logging to debug systems, but I've got a distributed system that these logs are all over the place. Does retrieving logs in any of these error cases happen through APM systems?
So, let me start by saying yes. Traditionally, log management solutions and APM solutions have been like distinct offerings. If you look at the markets for both, historically, it used to be different companies that did it, different services, where log management solutions centralize all of your logs into one place, make it easier for you to query, which becomes helpful in a distributed environment, right? If you have only like one service, then accessing the logs isn't that hard. APM solutions help you with the pinpointing, right? We mentioned distributed tracing, things like that. But as time evolves, they become closer and closer. Datadog was one of the first companies to offer what we call trace ID injection, which is an easy way to associate a trace, right? A flame graph that has a visual representation of a single request with the logs that are generated for that particular request. And it's a really powerful capability because what it gives you is the ability to identify, okay, this one user complained about this one thing. I found their session. I found the bad click. I can see the trace. And I get all of the log lines from all of the distributed systems that were part of that request. And I get all of the messages. I'm like, oh, this is what's going on. Oh, right.
That's really cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause that's often really hard, even on a couple systems having, I'm often dealing with just two systems talking to each other. That's hard enough to have a logs because, I mean, even if I have the logs, it's hard to align them because the clocks are a little different. So the timing's off a little bit and things like that. Interesting.
There's always something like that. So what ends up happening is that APM solutions and log management solutions become closer and closer. And you can easily see that in the market. Here at Datadog, we offer both. More and more companies are starting to offer similar solutions where they kind of merge the two, or they have distinct offerings, but under the same roof.
Let's go back to our service that has a team in a service in a repo. We've got a team handling failures for it and stuff. Is it the same team that developed it or is maintaining it, or is that often two teams now?
That really varies from organization to organization. It can change dramatically based on, you know, any company's approach to software development and to releasing to production. So you could have a dedicated SRE group that is heavily involved and is very distinct from the development team, and having a separate testing team in some cases, or you can have an organization that fully adopts like a DevOps mentality, where developers do all the operations and they own everything, including testing. It really varies from one organization to another.
Okay, so it's similar to testing that it because I've seen that a lot in testing, that there's some teams that do the development testing all at once, and then others that some other team does it. And there's good arguments on both sides. It really depends. So, interesting. Now, since I'm not an expert in this area, is there something that we haven't covered that's interesting that we should talk about?
There are two things that I kind of want to mention. Maybe it's actually one thing. You said earlier, despite the best testing, right, something will always break in production. Like if it's because of the higher load, if it's because of this like weird edge case that no one thought about, if it's because users are just weird and they'll always push your systems to the edge. One of the most common kind of types of failures that we've detected is releasing a new version of code, right? So when someone deploys a new version of code and it looks great and it passes tests and everything, they roll it out and something starts to fail. To that end, we want to make sure that we provide the best workflows around that. Like, how do we detect as fast as we can, like within a minute or within 2 minutes, that this new version of code is broken? And then that leads me to the second topic that I wanted to mention, which is automatic detection, right? Like, we talked about telemetry, right? It's the raw data, and then monitoring or all of these conditions that we can add and tools that we can add on top of it. One level above that is AI ops, right? So artificial intelligence ops. In that world, we do automatic detection. We do automatic alerting, and in the future, auto remediation is something that we hear demand for. But it's definitely like an exciting part of what we work on, the ability to go to our users and to tell them, hey, you might want to keep your eye out for this particular thing that's happening right now. You haven't set up alerts for it because it's brand new or it's different or someone hasn't thought about it yet, and we detected this anomaly, you know, you want to keep your eyes on.
Yeah. And that actually be cool. So does that happen? Like I'm imagining, I got a recommender system or something like that, that it's an extra thing. That's cool. We make a little more money on it. So we roll out a tweak to that and suddenly everybody's latency doubles or something. It'd be cool to have a system just like see that and say, now we're going to roll back the code. That's just bad. Is that something that people have?
That's exactly where we're going towards. So okay. We already have tools that help you detect, spikes in error rates, spikes in latency, the introduction of a new type of error, all these things. Automatic rollback is something that we want to be very careful with. I know a lot of engineers. I don't know a lot of engineers who will like yield the power to do a rollback to a fully automated system, but they would put a big red button in the alert where they say, okay, here's how you do it. When the alert happens, have a human involved to like make that, do that press. That is something that we support and some of our users have kind of implemented.
Now, you also mentioned anomaly detection. That is interesting just to see. I'm guessing it's a lot. You're collecting a lot of data. Something is weird going on that is different than it was before, and people might not even know to check for it. Is there tools for that then?
Oh, yes, definitely. The field of AI op that I mentioned right now is developing fairly quickly. There are more and more kind of tools that are popping up in the market, more companies that are dedicated to that sort of thing. Everyone looks at it slightly differently, but at the end of the day, it boils down to various types of anomaly detection, reading more and more types of telemetry, and making sure that we reduce noise to a minimum. Because if you have this cascading failure, for example, right? Like I have 30 services and they're all breaking together, either I'm going to need to spend like the first 5 minutes of an incident just like clicking through all of these alerts, or something helps me and says, okay, all of these 30 alerts are actually one issue. Here's the root cause for it. Like automatic root cause analysis is something that we do. Is a very popular type of feature because it saves a lot of time decluttering. Like, how do I deal with this mess of data that's thrown at me? And I look at just this like little golden nugget signal that says, this is what I need to focus on.
Oh, neat. That actually sounds exciting. There's a lot of cool things coming in the field then.
Definitely.
It's a lot more than I realized. So cool. This has been fascinating. I'm more and more excited about the monitoring thing. It's a lot more than just, can you just monitor it and make sure my website doesn't go down? There's a lot more going on there.
Definitely.
So thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Test and Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, you know, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.